go to the book of 1 Samuel in chapter 1, and I want to try to take a look at one of the extraordinary women in the Bible. I guess this subject has been something that's been circulating in my mind for several weeks now, and it was kind of hard to select which one to try to talk about. There's so many outstanding women characters in the Bible. There's many, many sermons to be had there. This morning I want to talk about one that's named Hannah. And I hope that you are familiar with the story of Hannah being found here in the book of 1 Samuel. But if the Lord would help us, I'd like to look at her situation for a few minutes this morning. There was a man that lived in the region of Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah. And it says in verse 2 that he had two wives. The name of one was Hannah, and the name of the other Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. And this man went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priest of the Lord, were there. And when the time was that Elkanah offered, he gave to Peninnah his wife and to all her sons and her daughters portions. But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, for he loved Hannah, but the Lord had shut up her womb. Worthy portion means a double portion, a very special extra portion that was given to Hannah because of Elkanah's great love for her. I am not sure exactly what led to this man Elkanah having two wives. We read about that in the Old Testament quite often. It was something that was not all that unusual. But I'll say this, I think it is just something that God permitted. For whatever reason, I think it is something that God endured, but I never for one minute think it's something that God endorsed and promoted for men to have more than one wife. In fact, the first marriage was between Adam and Eve, and I believe it was always God's intention that there would be one man and one woman would constitute a marriage. Now, I don't know why God suffered this other in that we see to the extent we do in the Old Testament. But I can tell you this, we know one thing. It says that Elkanah had two wives, and we learn pretty quickly here, we're going to learn as we read on in the next few verses, that the fact that he was a bigamist and he had two wives caused problems in his household. You can imagine this situation was not something that lent itself to peace and harmony in the house. And in fact, we see other Bible examples where that was the case. And I think, even here in the case of Elkanah and his two wives, Hannah and Peninnah, it led to jealousy and things such as that. And of course, we learn that because Peninnah was blessed with multiple children, she had sons and daughters, but we understand that Hannah, her womb had been left closed by the Lord for whatever his reasons are, his sovereign reasons, her womb had remained closed and she had not been able to have children. And so I know that it caused a lot of stress in the marriage. In fact, I kind of wondered myself if maybe the reason that Elkanah married a second wife, maybe it was because he was married to Hannah first and they were unable to have children. And back in that day, their custom was, it was a lot of pressure on couples to actually have children so that the family name could continue on and the inheritance could be passed down through the family. So they had a lot of pressure to have children. And I don't know for a fact which one he married first, but I see Hannah is listed first. He had two wives. One was Hannah and the other was Peninnah. I have a feeling maybe he was married to Hannah first. And I just say it's possible that because of her infertility, maybe he ended up marrying Peninnah because of the great pressure that he felt and the burden that he felt to have a family and have children that their name and inheritance might carry on. I don't know. Hey, didn't the same thing happen to Abraham? Remember, Abraham and Sarah were childless, and remember there was one handmaid named Hagar came into the picture for the very same reason. So you can see that that was important to them in that day in their age. But I'll tell you, it was a very dark time in the history of the nation of Israel as well, because it mentions in verse 3 that at the time that Elkanah and Hannah were living and worshiping, it says when they went up to the temple to worship, it says that the priest was there named Eli, and he had two sons, Hophni and Phinehas. And as far as priests go, I think you would be hard-pressed to find two worse characters in the Bible than Hophni and Phinehas. Okay, they were terrible. And you can read, in fact, here you can read about some of their exploits, but what they were famous for is when the Lord's people were coming to the temple and bringing offerings, the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, they were famous for taking some of the very best of the offerings and selecting out what they wanted for themselves and keeping it and greedily using it for themselves. And they were also, to everyone's chagrin and much disgrace, they were also called out for seducing some of the women that came to worship at the temple. You couldn't find two worse young men serving as priests. It was a dark time, and I'm going to tell you, I am not impressed at all with the priest named Eli. I think Eli lacks a lot and has a lot to be desired, and the main reason is because he was well aware of what his two evil sons were doing, and he did nothing to stop it. He had the power to intervene and do something to stop it, but he didn't do it. He didn't do enough. And so I don't look up to Eli very much at all either. I think there's been a lot better priest. So there's kind of a dark time in the history of Israel because of who's there at the temple at the time. But we can see that because in verse 5, when it says that Elkanah gave this worthy or this double portion unto Hannah, we can tell how much that he loved her in spite of the fact that the Lord had closed her womb. Verse 6, it says that her adversary also provoked her sore. Her adversary was Peninnah, Elkanah's other wife. And she provoked Hannah sore for to make her fret because the Lord had shut up her womb. And as he did so year by year, when she went up to the house of the Lord, so she provoked her. And therefore she wept and did not eat. And then said Elkanah, her husband, to her, Hannah, why weepest thou? And why eatest thou not? And why is thy heart grieved? Am not I better to thee than 10 sons? Not only did Elkanah love his wife, but I believe Hannah greatly loved her husband. And you can see the fact that Hannah is greatly distressed because of the fact that God had closed her womb and had not given her children yet. Now there's the other wife, Peninnah. God continues to bless her. It says that she had both sons and daughters. She had multiple children, and all Hannah wanted was one. All Hannah wanted was to have at least one child. And haven't you seen that before? Haven't we seen that in life sometimes before? I always think of the irony of that, about some young couples that I know who have been unable to have children for various reasons. And I don't know why. Sometimes God in His sovereignty, in His sovereign wisdom, sometimes He withholds children. I don't know why. Only God knows. But haven't we all seen some young couples before that desired to have a child, but yet were not able to for some reason? And in this case of Hannah, it was greatly disturbing her. Hannah was greatly becoming depressed about this, and she was fretting about this. And then to make things worse, the other wife in the situation there, Peninnah, begins goading her and begins taunting her because she's unable to have children. I mean, it is a terrible situation. Can you see what situation Elkanah has brought about by having two wives? I mean, just in these few little verses, you can see the stress and the turmoil that is occurring in this household because of this. This was never God's intention, and I promise you, this is not something God's in favor of. But nevertheless, here they are, and this is where they're at. I believe that something about Hannah, something inside of her resonated, and I believe that she understood about the importance of motherhood and the great significance of motherhood, and that fact that she wanted a child so desperately, and the fact that her rival was taunting her and it was making things even worse. I believe that Hannah realized that the calling of motherhood is one of the, if not the highest calling God has ever conferred upon a woman, is that to be a mother of a child or children. What a great honor that God has conferred upon women to have this role, to be a mother. And that's all that Hannah seemingly wanted to have and to desire. Isn't it ironic also that how Hannah, I believe, understood this, and Hannah viewed not only marriage and viewed her love and her marriage to her husband in a very lofty light in a manner, but I believe that she desired to have children for a very noble cause as well. We're going to read in just a moment that she's going to actually be willing to dedicate her child to the Lord for the entirety of his life. And so I believe that she understood about the honor of being a mother. And isn't that ironic too, that how the world that you and I live in doesn't see it that way? The world that we live in nowadays almost seems to belittle motherhood oftentimes. Have you ever noticed that? It seems to belittle and make fun of motherhood. In fact, there are lots and lots of people today who would encourage you, don't ever be a mother. And if you're on the pathway of being a mother, they would try to make it easy for you to not be a mother. Okay? And so... is so ironic of how this world, in every sense and in every facet that I ever consider, seems to go in direct opposition to the things of God, the thoughts of God, the words of God, the precepts and the commandments of God. This world goes in an opposite direction, doesn't it? Something to be careful of as we go through our lives here and our conversation in this world. I just take note of those little things a lot of times. I say, look at that. I says, here's somebody promoting something in direct opposition to God's word. You see it every day. But I believe she recognizes the great honor and the great privilege and the high calling of a motherhood. And in fact, you think about her, and I thought about a couple of other women in the Bible. There was one who was quite a story herself named Rahab. Remember Rahab the harlot? You remember her background of how she had just a very disgusting lifestyle, and she had made a shipwreck of her life, and she had made so very many errors and used such poor judgment in her life. But then God became involved in her life, and you remember the story of how when Joshua and the Israelites were about to come over the cross the river and go into Jericho there, how that she ended up housing the spies. He sent two of the spies, and it's a great story to go read that. We don't have time to go and look at it this morning, But I'll just say this, in the end, we'll find that not only did Rahab taking care of the spies because of her love and her honor for God, we find later on that she is married and she ended up having a son named Boaz. You might remember a man named Boaz and how important he was concerning another young woman of the Bible named Ruth. You see, there's one woman who was not married, and in fact, her life was going in a very terrible direction. If it would have kept going, she might not even have lived to be of a very old age, but God intervened. Her life turned around, and it started going upward, and it only continued going upward until she had a son. She, not only was she honored by marriage later, but she was honored by motherhood, having a son named Boaz. Very important character in the Bible. And then you got the young lady Ruth, the young Moabitess. Remember the young lady? You had Elimelech and Naomi that had left out of the land of Israel during the famine. And where did they go? Of all places, they ended up going eastward into this terrible land called Moab. Moab over there was never blessed in any sense in the Bible. And they went over there and they left and they had their two sons. Well, they wasn't there very long and the two sons got married. And then eventually the husband died and then the two sons died. And then you got Naomi is left a widow and she has two daughters-in-law. And then one of them was named Ruth, the little Moabitess Ruth, who really had nothing. And there she is, being from the land of Moab. And what another great story. We don't have time to look at her this morning. Maybe another day. But there's another outstanding woman of the Bible, that young Moabitess named Ruth. She had nothing, but she ended up going with her mother-in-law. And oh, what a great prayer that she had. Remember when she told her mother-in-law and how that she was going to leave and go back with her to her homeland and that her God would be her God. And what a great prayer that she had and a great statement about herself. But we end up, we find that young lady Ruth marrying a man named Boaz, the same one. And you know that Ruth and Boaz ended up having children. She ended up being the great-grandmother of a man named David. You might remember him. He was a great character in the Bible. And so you can see how God has intervened providentially in the lives of these great women. And so I'm thinking about how it is that marriage and motherhood brought great honor to both Rahab and Ruth. And also we're going to find it's going to bring it to Hannah as well. So you might understand by reading here, one of the things that we're able to glean is that Hannah and Elkanah worshiped together. You know, I've always felt like that's very important, that a husband and wives worship together. And in fact, it's part of the marriage bond, and it is part of that which helps strengthen the marriage bond. You see, I think in some homes today and in some families today, I believe that the focus on the marriage relationship of the husband and wife has gotten lost a little bit in some homes today, and the focus has become the children and the love of the children. Well, that's very commendable. I know God would certainly expect you and I to love our children and to take care of our children. What kind of a reasonable parent wouldn't want to do that, right? Well, we all do. But I'll tell you, the focus of the marriage and the strength of the home is because of the relationship of the husband and the wife. And we must never forget that. Never forget that. And, you know, when husbands and wives focus on their relationship first, and they make sure that they are doing the things that each one needs to do, and we're expressing love and grace and mercy to our spouses, guess what's happening as you do that, and the spouse is reciprocating, and you're both taking care of your relationship, putting it first, even above the children, guess what's happening as a result of that? Your children are observing you as you do it. They are watching you every step of the way, and I promise you, you are teaching your children valuable lessons and fundamental lessons about the strength and the godliness of a home situation by the way you treat your spouse and the way you view your relationship. Your children are learning because of that. They are watching how you treat your spouse. And when you show love and you show respect and great honor and you dignify your spouse at all times, your children are noticing that. And guess what? They're learning how they're going to hopefully do that should they have a spouse one day. And they're learning some valuable lessons in life. And they're just by observing our relationships. I think it's something that we should all not let slip away and keep in mind that that relationship of the husband and wife is so very important. In verse 9, it says, Hannah rose up. You see her, she was weeping. She was refusing to eat. She was so upset because Peninnah was taunting her about not being able to have children. But yet, there she is, loving her husband, and she's going with him to worship, going to bring these offerings every single year. Every year, year after year, Peninnah keeps goading her and taunting her, making fun of her. She's weeping. She's not eating. She is so upset. What a terrible household because of that. But you see, when Elkanah says, he tells her, he says, am I not better to thee than 10 sons? And he reminds her of his love for her. And what the things that he's given her. And says that in verse 9 that Hannah, I believe she listened and she considered. It says she rose up after they had eaten in Shiloh and after they had drunk. And now Eli the priest sat upon a seat by a post of the temple of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed to the Lord and wept sore. And she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look upon the affliction of thine handmaid and remember me and not forget thine handmaid, but wilt give unto thine handmaid a man-child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head. I believe that Hannah's motives were pure. It did not seem that she was asking and praying to God for children just so she could get back at Peninnah. It doesn't seem that way at all, because when I read Hannah's prayer and I learn what she's praying for, she's down on her knees and she's weeping softly and she's praying to the Lord and she's simply asking God, not for a whole bunch of children, but just one child. Would you let me have a son? Praying for one son. And then she makes a vow to God. And she says, Lord, if you'll do that, if you'll just grant me the one son, I'll turn around and I'll dedicate him to you all the days of his life. I'll give up my son so he can serve you all the days of his life. I'll tell you, I believe her motives were pure. I believe Hannah had a wonderful heart. And I believe she's thinking the right way. She's not trying to get back at Peninnah or trying to impress someone else that way. I think she wants a son so she can dedicate him to the Lord and have like a gift and an offering unto God. I mean, how noble is that? I can promise you it would not be something easy for me to do, to have a child and turn around and to give that child away within a very short time and give that child to go and know that he's going to serve the Lord the rest of his life. I'm going to miss out on so many of the normal things of motherhood. I believe she had a really good heart. I believe that she loved God. It says that during her prayer, it says that it came to pass in verse 12, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli marked her mouth. And Hannah, she spake in her heart, only that her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. And therefore Eli thought that she had been drunken. And Eli said unto her, How long wilt thou be drunken? Put away thy wine from thee. And Hannah answered and said, No, my lord, I am a woman of a sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Count not thine handmaid for a daughter of Belial, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto. Isn't that something that she began pouring out her heart to the Lord like that? And can't you just see someone praying from the very depth of their heart? I'm talking about a woman that simply wanted to have a son that she might be able to dedicate him to the Lord. Is that not a heart of someone that loved God? Didn't she love God? And wasn't her motives pure and her reasons good for wanting the son? And there she is. She's in the temple and she is pouring out her soul, her very soul, to the Lord. And did you notice that she praying, and it says that Eli noticed her and he said her lips were moving, but he didn't hear her say any words. Well, did you know that we can pray? We don't have to speak out loud. Did you know you can pray in your heart and in your mind without saying a word, and God hears every word? I hope you all know that. He sure does. In the same way as you can speak to God in your heart, God can speak to your heart and you never hear an audible word. Isn't that something, how God communicates with the spirits and the souls of his children? God is able to do that. But you see what I mean about Eli? You see what I said? Eli is not the best priest that there's ever been. In fact, I think he left a lot to be desired. There's nothing that impresses me about Eli and the job that he was supposed to be performing. The biggest thing is he didn't take care of his own two sons, who were terrible and did not deserve to be serving in the priesthood. But now, what does he do? Eli's looking and he sees Hannah on her knees and she's pouring her soul out to God. What is Eli doing? He says, Hey, why are you drunk? When are you going to stop drinking? He says, You need to lay off the wine. He says, You've had too much wine. You see, he's falsely accused her. Now, here's a man that's supposed to be the priest, and this man has no sense of discernment whatsoever. Can you see that? He has falsely accused Hannah while she is praying and pouring her very heart and her soul out to the Lord. And this man's trying to tell her, You've had too much to drink. Just like, remember the apostles on the day of Pentecost? What did they say about them? He says, You men have had much new wine. It wasn't it at all. His lack of discernment, I tell you, it's really telling about him as his role as a priest, isn't it? It was a dark time for Israel. But you know, God's working on something. God is working through this remarkable woman. God is working to bring someone in who's going to do a much better job than Eli and his two sons. God is working on something here. But you know what I like? She told him, she says, No, he says, I'm a woman of a sorrowful spirit. She didn't even tell him why she was praying so deeply and pouring her heart out and her petitions to God. She didn't tell him why. She just says, I'm a woman of a sorrowful spirit. And it says, I'm not drinking. I haven't had any wine or strong drink, but I've poured out my soul before God. And then Eli, apparently recognizing his error and his mistake, in verse 17, Eli answered and says, Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked him. And she said, Let thine handmaid find grace in thy sight. And the very last part of verse 18 says, So the woman went her way and did eat, and her countenance was no more sad. I believe herein lies a good lesson for you and I. when we have troubles in life and our heart and our soul are burdened, she did the right thing. We need to go to God. We need to get on our knees and we need to bring our troubles to God and we need to speak to God about this. But you see, where she did so good is when she finished bringing this burden to God and she set this burden down and she gave it to God. She truly gave it to God. What did she do? She got up, she ate, and her countenance was no more sad. She left it with God. She truly left her burden with God. Now, there's a good lesson for you and I. How many times have I had a burden upon my heart, call myself going and kneeling down and bringing my burden to the Lord and asking God to help me with something, but then get up and just never leave it with God and just continue right on my merry way worrying about it. Never leaving it, never trusting God. Have any of you ever done the same? I'll tell you, I'll raise my hand. I've done it many times. I have done it so many times. What a good lesson for you and I this morning. This woman named Hannah, this righteous woman who loved her husband and loved God, but she understood so much about God. She understood so much about Him that she's able to come and bring her petition, share it with God, give it to God, and then leave it with God. Get up and leave, and her countenance is better. She got up and she was ready to eat. Her countenance was better. I believe she fully trusted in God to hear and to help with her burdens. I want to be more like Hannah. I want to be more like her. I want to know, and I want to demonstrate through my actions that I love God and I trust God and I believe in God and I know He's able to hear my prayers and my petitions. I hope that we can all be more like Hannah in that way. Isn't that something? I'll tell you, you start reading on from verse 19 and you read on down to the end of the chapter there, and you'll find that God answered her prayer. She had a son, and she named him Samuel. And furthermore, she 100% kept her vow unto God. She had that young son named Samuel, which means ask of God. His name does. She had that son, and as soon as he was weaned, what did she do? She brought him with some offerings and brought him up to the temple and left him there with Eli, fully keeping her vow to God. I believe it's always important that we keep our vows to God, but that's what she did. And we don't have time to really look at it this morning, but I want you to read chapter 2, the first 10 verses of chapter 2 as well. This is Hannah's prayer after she did this. God answered her prayer. God gave her the son that she prayed for. He opened the womb, gave her that son. She kept her end of the bargain. She kept her vow. She raised the child for several years, and when he was weaned as a very young child, she brought him and left him there under the care of Eli at the temple and kept her vow. And then she went into this prayer in chapter 2. It is the most remarkable prayer from this outstanding woman. I mean, just the first couple of verses, she prayed and she said, "My heart rejoiceth in the Lord. Mine horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth is enlarged over mine enemies because I rejoice in thy salvation. There is none holy as the Lord, for there is none beside thee, neither is there any rock like our God." On and on. What a wonderful prayer. It just begins to show you a little glimmer and a little bit of the depth of her love and her knowledge of God. I'll tell you, this was a wonderful wife for this man, Elkanah. Young people today, I hope that you're praying that if you desire to have a spouse one day, if you're a young man, I hope you're praying and that God will give you a woman just of the same character in the same nature as this woman named Hannah. That's the type of wife that a man needs to have. I'll tell you, there is so much that the sisters in the church do for us here. We don't have enough time to even start talking about it this morning, but God said it's not good that the man should be alone, and I promise you God knew what he was talking about. He said it's not good that the man should be alone, and God created Eve and gave Eve as a wife to the man Adam that he had created. There's so many things that the sisters, the righteous and beloved sisters, do. A man, I'll tell you, a man, if he didn't have a good wife, for most men, and that's maybe not true for all, but for most men, those of us that are married, I'll tell you, we'd be a lot harder in our crusty if we didn't have our wives, because one of the things they do is they soften our hearts a lot. They help soften our hearts. And there's so many things. That's another subject in itself. I can't even get started on that this morning. But there's so many outstanding women in the Bible. This Hannah is one of them. And not only did she praise God with this wonderful prayer, a lot of good thoughts in that. You can read a little bit further down in chapter 2, verse 19. It says that Hannah made a little coat and brought it to her son Samuel from year to year, and when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. I believe that she probably continued to keep her relationship going with her son as best as she could. But it was so noble that she kept her vow, and she did exactly as she promised God. It says that Eli blessed Elkanah and his wife and said, "The Lord give thee seed of this woman for the loan which is lent to the Lord." And they went unto their own home. Look what it says in verse 21. Hannah only asked for one son, but in verse 21 it says, "And the Lord visited Hannah so that she conceived and bare three sons and two daughters. And the child Samuel grew before the Lord." God gave her five more children after Samuel. Isn't that something? How about that? God blessing his people when we trust in him and when we pray. She's just one of the examples in the scripture. There's so many more. And I'll just tell you, I am so thankful for the sisters in the church and what they do. This place wouldn't even begin to feel the same if we didn't have these precious sisters and these mothers in Israel here and all the things that they do, usually behind the scenes. We don't even see most of them. But I'll tell you, when we have these meetings, we have a 2 or 3 day meeting and there's so much preparation has to take place. We take it for granted a lot of times about how that we go and we have a wonderful worship service, and then a few minutes, we step in the back in the lunchroom, and there's this wonderful feast prepared, and can sit down and we can visit in fellowship and just have the best time. Well, somebody's working behind the scenes to make you comfortable and help provide that for you. There's so many ways that the sisters are working within all of these church families. I'll tell you, I appreciate each and every one. I appreciate the examples that God has placed in the scripture. Maybe we'll talk about a few more of them. There's so many of them. You can see it would take a while to even begin covering them all. But can't you see the wisdom of God? Think about the life of Rahab. And listen, Rahab was on a pathway of destruction, and now she ends up, her name is listed in Hebrews chapter 11. With all of the other great characters of faith. Her name is listed in Hebrews chapter 11. You think about Ruth and how her life went. You think about a woman like Mary Magdalene, out of whom the Lord cast 7 devils. Okay, she was possessed with demonic spirits. And at some point in her life, the Lord had caused those spirits to come out of her. Watch in her life, she was one of the women that consistently followed the Lord and followed him and even followed him all the way to the cross. You know who we have at the cross there at the last moments? We don't see any of the apostles or disciples except we see John there for just a moment. And then we see the women. They're the women near the cross there. And then certainly after the crucifixion, we see Mary Magdalene and a couple of the other women going to attend to the body of Jesus and getting ready to go and anoint it. There's so much there in the scriptures. I'm just very thankful for what God has given us. I hope you'll think about some of the things that this righteous woman named Hannah did and how we might take from her life and some of her great faith that she has in God and how she used it. And always remember that when we go to God with a burden upon our heart, how about we take it to God and we ask God for help, and how about we leave it with Him? Can we do that? Wouldn't that help us going forward if we're able to do that? I am going to strive myself, and I hope that I can, because I know that it will help me just from following the great example of Hannah. May God bless and keep each of you this morning.